Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is business or busyness. And the numbers to call to get coaching on your business or your busyness for that matter, 866-254-1579. That's toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I will begin by setting the table and talking a little bit about this distinction, business or busyness. So I have coached a number of people in the film industry over the years, and partly a function of my own background, partly a function of living in Hollywood, where they all are mostly. But one of the interesting things that I've found is that there is a mentality in many of the studios, not all, that basically, if you are not seen to be busy, you are not contributing. And so the busier you are, the more important you are. And one of the ways that manifests in an extreme version, I won't mention the studio, but one of the studios, basically, when you get on a plane, whoever gets their laptop fired up last winds up having to buy the drinks or the lunch for the whole the whole crew. And it's a mentality that is indicative of a misunderstanding of what businesses run on and how things get done. So if you have the idea that the secret of success is a straight map to doing, the more you do, the more gets done, the more gets done, the more successful you are, i.e. the more money you make, et cetera, et cetera. If that were the way things would work, then being busy would be the equivalent of being effective. But it takes almost no life experience to realize that the math doesn't work on that. That you can be extremely busy and not a lot is happening, or you can be not feel terribly busy and things are moving at a clip. Now, there's a few reasons for that. So coming up, we have the You Can Heal Your Life Summit, and which you can sign up for free at youcanhealyourlifesummit.com. And one of the early versions of the You Can Heal Your Life Summit, or the Hay House World Summit, as it was called, I interviewed Jack Canfield. So I'm assuming you know who Jack Canfield is, but he's the co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books and, you know, a true innovator and leader in the transformational space. And it was great fun for me, and it was quite sweet because he read The Inside Out Revolution and wrote me a beautiful testimonial for it, to his own surprise, as he said the next day, I didn't actually expect to stay up all night and read this, but this was amazing. But when I interviewed him, the thing that stood out to me from the interview wasn't part of the interview. It never made it to air because it was when I was talking to him before we started recording. And I just was making small talk. I was just chatting and I said, oh, you busy at the moment? And he got really quiet, which I was interesting. And he went, I've got a lot on, but I'm not busy. And I kind of knew what he meant. See, busy is not a measure of activity. Busy is a state of mind. When we've got a lot of thinking in our head, we feel busy. And when there's not a lot going on in there, or when it's just passing through, thoughts come, they go, you know, no big deal, we don't feel busy at all, no matter how much we're doing. So one problem with busyness as a measure of effectiveness is that busy's not even an accurate measure of activity. It's a measure of noise in head. And the more noise in head, the busier you will think you are. The less noise in head, the less busy you will think you are. You may still be doing a lot, which is what, to me, Jack was pointing to when he said, well, I've got a lot on. But busyness has nothing to do with level of activity. Now, I'm going to take this one step further before I go to the phones. Lisa in Ontario, you're first up. If you want to get in, 866-254-1579. 001-760-918-4300. But I want to make one more point before I start with you guys on some business coaching. And that is what I call the crucial ratio. So we actually just put a video up about this, which you can find online at, where would you find it? By going to YouTube and typing in the crucial ratio, probably. And what I'm pointing to in that video, and you can also find it in the Creating the Impossible book, another version of it, is that productivity is not a measure of activity. It is not even a measure of results. It is a measure of the ratio between effort and reward, between activity and results. So most people understand this most quickly when I talk about diminishing returns. You must have examples of where you were working on something to the point where nothing was getting done. You realized, oh, I've been staring at this same page for 5 minutes, or I've been lost on YouTube for 3 hours, or I've been trying to type the same paragraph for a day. Diminishing returns is an example of that crucial ratio between effort and reward, where the effort is going up and up and up, but the reward, the payoff, isn't changing. That is low productivity. Now, you can push through that. If you're doing 5 units of effort per 1 unit of reward and you're a hard worker, you can get 5 units of reward and do 25 units of effort and you will be really, really, really active. You may or may not be busy because that's state of mind. That's nothing to do with activity, but you can be really, really, really active and not get a lot done. But similarly, there's a point at which you can be getting 5 units of reward for 1 unit of effort where it feels like you're barely doing anything and all sorts of things are happening. And when you start to look at productivity, at effectiveness in your business in terms of this crucial ratio between effort and reward, stops making sense to push when you're experiencing diminishing returns. And it really starts becoming a really interesting topic. Like, well, how do I tilt the ratio so that I'm getting more reward for each effort? Or as I sometimes talk about it, more juice for each squeeze, right? So I sometimes talk about the secret of productivity is not squeezing more oranges. It's learning to get more juice to each squeeze. More bang for each buck. And it turns out that there are a few simple things that really tilt that ratio. And I'll share a couple of them with you right now. And the first one is engagement. When we are fully engaged, we automatically get more bang for our buck. So This is where a lot of people talk about, well, how do you feel about multitasking? And is there a difference between men multitasking and female multitasking? And there's all sorts of multitasking theories. Some people are violently against it. Some people are violently in favor of it. For me, what I've seen is that generally speaking, multitasking lowers your ratio. So yes, you can absolutely get stuff done. But when your effort is being split, when your attention is split, you tend to get less reward for each effort. You tend to get less out of an email that you're half paying attention to while you're also watching a video or a sales call that you're making while also trying to follow a conversation that's going on elsewhere in the office or in the Starbucks or wherever you are, than when you are fully engaged. So engagement is one absolutely key to tilting the crucial ratio in your favor. The other is enjoyment. Now, they're kind of chicken and egg, because the more engaged we are, the more we tend to enjoy what we're doing. And the more we enjoy what we're doing, the more engaged we tend to be. And I used to talk about it in terms of a simple cycle. So if I say to you, and this is something I've said to people all over the world, so I kind of know what your answers will be, but go with me. If I say to you, hey, when you enjoy something, do you tend to do more of it or less? And most people say more. And then if I say, and if you do more of something, do you tend to get better at it or worse? And most people say better. And I say, if you're getting noticeably better at something, do you tend to enjoy it more or less? Oh, well, enjoy it more. And so you can see that enjoyment begets activity, begets learning, begets enjoyment. And it's a virtuous cycle. It's a positive cycle of effectiveness, because as you are enjoying it more, doing it more, more engaged, more effective, getting more bang for your buck, getting more reward, it reinforces the, oh man, this is kind of fun. This is kind of exciting. And it gets better and better. Now, similarly, when you're not enjoying something, left to your own devices, would you do more of it or less? And everyone, of course, would do less. And if you're not doing much of anything, do you tend to learn more or less, get better or worse results? Well, worse results. Well, if you're getting noticeably worse results, do you tend to enjoy something more or less? Well, most people enjoy it less. So you can see that there's a very simple positive spin and negative spin, a cycle towards greater effort and reward, greater ratio of effort to reward, and one that moves away. But here's the thing. We tend to try to get ourselves to do more as our way of getting into that cycle. But actually, the leverage is in learning to enjoy more. And the only thing between you and enjoying whatever it is that you're doing is the idea that it's not enjoyable. In other words, the only thing between you and loving what you do is a thought. And when you start to see that, it stops looking like a good idea to take that thinking seriously. And you start showing up and just getting on with things. And to many people's surprise, including mine from time to time, anything can be enjoyable. So I'm going to continue talking about that, and I'm going to talk about different aspects of that. If you're interested in this as a topic, on Monday, I'm beginning a 3-week online program called A Whole New Way of Thinking About Business. And we're going to meet every morning. We're going to do an hour a day, Monday to Friday, of webinars for 3 weeks. And you can learn more about that. You can join me for that at michaelneal.org/business. But for now, let's go to you. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Canada. And let's speak with Lisa. Lisa, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Okay, so my question to you is, I'm leaving a really secure job with pension for my future, for my family, and full benefits to start my own business. So I'm working in a position where it's very strenuous on my body, a lot of lifting, a lot of walking. And I flipped over, did some education to become a natural health practitioner. Mm-hmm. So for me to make a move like this, I'm kind of nervous, but at the same time, excited. So I hope I'm making the right decision. I'm not sure if you have any advice for, people in that situation.
Well, let's start with, I hope I'm making the right decision.
I know.
Okay? How are you going to know?
You're right. I won't know until I'm in it, right?
So you can take that one off your mind.
Okay.
Right. Literally, I'm not saying those thoughts won't come up, but it is sort of like, a kid saying to you, are we there yet?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, no. Well, when are we there? What? I don't know, but we'll know when we're there. So it's like, it can be annoying when that voice in the backseat keeps going, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Am I making the right decision? Am I making the right decision? But we also know that there's no answer to that question.
Right.
So that will make life easier just not entertaining that one.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of making the move, this is the second thing in what you said that I heard. That, you're kind of excited, you're kind of nervous. Well, yeah, that's called thought. That's what human beings do. When we think about it and we imagine a positive outcome, we feel excited. And when we think about it and we imagine a negative outcome, we feel kind of scared. And there's no need to do anything about that. Like, you don't need to only think about positive outcomes, because why would, like, that's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's just all that feeling is telling you is, oh, at the moment, I must be making up a positive outcome and believing it. Oh, at the moment, I must be making up a negative outcome and believing it. None of that is actually telling you anything, except where your thinking happens to be going in that moment.
Very true. I never thought about it that way.
Well, here's what's great about seeing that. You now have half as much to think about. Now, when we show up to work, to a business, to anything with less on our mind, we're more available to the moment. Mm-hmm. We're more present with whatever is going on, which is going to make us more effective, more, because we'll see, because we're present. It's going to allow us to notice our real-time responsive intelligence, our real-time guiding intelligence, as it comes through and nudges us left and right and forward and back, moment to moment. Mm-hmm. And there's less of a feeling of stress, pressure, and busyness, because stress, pressure, and busyness are the feeling of a lot of thinking.
Well, yeah, I definitely agree with that, because with my position that I'm in right now, it's very busy and it can be very stressful. And then I come home with like a big headache.
Yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
That's it. So that at that level, if all, and I'm sorry, I seem to be choking here.
It's okay.
I'm on the radio and I don't quite know what I'm going to do.
Cough it out.
But so on the one side, we've got all the things, you don't need to think about. That's going to be cool. Now, if you're up for it, tell me a bit about the new business and, you know, how you're thinking about it and where you're starting.
Okay, so I'm basically starting from scratch, and I want to work on some clientele to help them, you know, feel better emotionally, physically, mentally. I've kind of had a passion for this for quite a while, and it just, you know, dawned on me, I'm at the highest I can go with my career, and I'm at the max pay that I'm ever going to receive. And I just feel that I'm not satisfied from it. But when I start to help people just on my own, just for fun to help them, I get more satisfaction talking to them for 5 minutes than going to work for 8 hours. So I decided, you know, I'm going to go back. I'm going to, you know, get some education, graduate. Mind you, I'm married, 2 kids. So I've got a lot going on, too. And I just feel like I wanted to make that move.
Okay. So as it stands, what's the sort of next step?
Well, the next step for me is to basically start getting my clientele, start very slow with stuff that I know that I can be good with, and then branch off from there and start introducing some different products or different strategies to help people with their life, with their health, and then, you know, just go from there and really branch out.
Okay. So, and this is, by the way, I'm going to give you a little thought experiment here, but it's just for the sake of you kind of looking. It's not, this is the right way to think about things. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So if you were going to hire me to get your business up and running, and I was a good employee, but showed no initiative, which means basically whatever you ask me to do, I'm going to do, but I'm not going to come up with anything on my own.
Okay.
What would be on my to-do list over the first sort of week or month?
The first thought that came to my mind is more PR work to kind of get my name out there, to get myself going. The clientele, I feel, will kind of come when you put your name out there, and basically word of mouth, that's how I feel. Advertising too, but more word of mouth, I feel better for business, I feel. But that's how I would start because, you know, nobody really knows about me yet.
Okay. So now, assumedly, and I'm just running this in real time with you. Assumedly, PR might get people to try you, but you have to actually work with them to get the word of mouth.
Right.
Right. So really what you're looking to do initially, from what I'm hearing, is get people to experience what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, it sounds pretty accurate. And then I'm assuming then you have to, you know, get them back, book them again, see how they're doing, kind of keep tabs on them and go from there.
Well, let me kind of sum this strategy up, because I think it's not the only strategy, obviously, but I think it's a great strategy to start a business, which is, okay, so in the first month, what I want to do is really help as many people as I can.
Mm-hmm.
But help them at a level that's kind of like, holy cow, for them.
Right.
Because that's what generates word of mouth. People don't, good doesn't generate word of mouth. Like, holy freaking mother of God generates word of mouth.
Right. And that's what I want people to experience when they come to me, because even when I speak to people one-on-one and they just happen to try stuff that I've suggested, they do feel better. And they're like, how do you know all this? I'm like, I don't know. It just kind of comes to me. Like I've always known things about health and wellness.
So if the job in the early days is to create as many HFMOG, holy freaking mother of God moments for people as you can, then what does that suggest to you as a sort of a place to put your attention, or if I was your employee to, you know, have me put my attention?
God, you're making me really think.
That is my job, ma'am.
Yeah. God, it's, I really feel like I really got to work on them and understand them and just take my time with them.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really smart to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to take my time with each person. Like, I'm not looking to get 100 people a month off the bat, but just slowly, you know, work my way up.
So how simple would it be if your job was not to control your thinking so that you were always excited and never nervous? Your job was not to figure out whether or not you made the right decision or question the decision every step of the way. Your job was not to reach this many people. Your job was simply to take your time with each person and create as amazing an experience for them as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Like if somebody offered you a job and said, hey, I got a job for you. The pay is going to probably start kind of low, but over time has unlimited upside. And the job is, I want you to come in, and each person who comes through the door, and there'll be a few things that you do to get people through the door, but really, each person that comes through the door, your job is to take your time with them, get to know them, and really, as best you can, make an HFMOG difference with them. Do you want the job?
For sure, yeah.
Well, that's the nature of your business.
Yeah. Makes so much sense. And you know, I've thought about it, but I've never understood it until you just worded it like that. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. And best of luck with it. It sounds fun.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa. You know, one of the reasons that I would say I've done a number of business courses over the year. I've taught a number of business courses over the year. And the two that have the most accurate titles, this might make sense, this might not make sense. I'm making myself laugh as I'm hearing it in my head. But last year I taught a course with one of my colleagues, George Pransky, that we called Falling in Love with Your Business. And the reason that that was such a great course, and it was a great course, and people had all sorts of breakthroughs around their business in it, is because it put the attention on what moves the needle. When we fall in love with every aspect of our business, it's like what I was saying about enjoyment, but just kind of taking it even further. What if you didn't just enjoy it, you fell in love with it? We naturally take our time, right? If you're in love with something, you're not in a rush to get it done, right? In fact, I don't know if you've had the experience of a movie that you love and you're having such a great time and you kind of don't want to get to the end of the movie. So maybe you like keep pausing it or take a break so you can savor it, or you know, back in the old days, but you guys are Hay House people, so you probably read books still. Like you do that with a book, you get to a book and you like, you don't want the book to finish. Well, that's what it is. When you're in love with your business, you're not trying to get it done. You're not trying to get it over. You're getting into it. You kind of want to savor it. You kind of want to really enjoy it. And that is always on the menu because love is our default setting. We have to think our way out of love. Right? We have to teach our kids who is worthy of love and who is not, because otherwise they'll just love everybody indiscriminately. I mean, you know, my baby doesn't even see skin color. Now, you probably think that's a great thing, but the way we raise our kids, we find the things that they're not supposed to love and teach them. Love this, don't love that. Love this person, don't love that person. Love these people, don't love those people. And we learn what to love and what not to love. And then it goes beyond people. It's we start to teach ourselves, oh, I love this because the first time I did it, I enjoyed it. I don't love that because the first time I did it, I didn't enjoy it. And now we have this book inside us of things that it's okay to love and things that it would be bad or wrong to love or that are unlovable. But that's not innate. That's not natural. It is normal. It is so normal, but it's not natural. We are born to love indiscriminately. We are made of love, as best I can tell. And so falling in love with your business really is as simple as taking all the things out of the list of this bit is unlovable. Because I think about it in a very unlovable way. And that points to the second course title that I really love, which is the one coming up starting on Monday, A Whole New Way of Thinking About Business. Because we think business is a thing. We think there is a thing called business, and there are people called business people who understand business and know how to do business, and we either think of ourselves as one of them or not one of them. But there's no such thing as business. Business is a word we use to describe sort of the collective mechanism through which we exchange goods and services for money, or we exchange value for value. So if it's just us, we often don't even think of it as business. We just think, oh, I'm just doing my thing. But if there start to be systems and structures and other people, well, the term that we as a society have for that collective engagement in a common goal is business. But notice that there's nothing in there that tells you what it is, or how it feels, or how quickly it has to do things. There's no such thing as business, but we think business, and then we treat business as whatever we've thought. So if we think business is hard, then we're suspicious of it when it's easy, and we will seek out hard because, well, that's business. If we think business is a necessary evil, gotta go to work. I don't know if you remember the old Dunkin' Donuts commercials, time to make the donuts. And there was this guy who'd get up every morning at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. to go in and make the donuts because their donuts were always fresh. Well, you know, if that's what business is for you, oh, time to make the donuts. Well, then that's the experience you'll have of a place that you kind of wish you didn't have to go, but you go because you have to. And I remember I worked for one summer in a warehouse driving a forklift, which actually, bizarrely, was a childhood dream of mine. And so it was kind of cool for the first month. But the song I would play on my way into work, and literally I would sit in the driveway of this factory, and before going in, before clocking in, I just had this Elvis Costello song, and the refrain was, "And I would rather be anywhere else than here today." It's a good song. It's called Oliver's Army. It has nothing to do with work. But, you know, that is how many of us think business. And so that's how we experience business, because we experience thought. We create the world with thought, and then we experience the world that we created as if it's real, as if it has a life of its own beyond our thinking. But it doesn't. It's a total construct. And because it's a construct, everything's up for grabs. So if you think business is stressful, well, it could be. If you think business is hard, well, it could be. If you think business is something other people are good at, well, it could be. If you think business is easy, well, it could be. If you think business is fun, well, it can be. If you think you're good at business, well, at least you'll find out, because you won't talk yourself out of it before you get into it. So none of this is saying you need to think positive about business, because the problem with that is we don't believe ourselves. Like, I don't know about you. I don't know how you get on with affirmations and things like that. But most of the time, we affirm what we don't believe. Otherwise, we wouldn't affirm it. Like, if you think life is great, you probably don't go around going, "Life is great. Life is great. Life is great." You probably do that when you think life sucks. If you genuinely are confident, I can pretty much guarantee you don't walk around going, "I am confident. I am confident. I am confident." You do that when you're scared witless. So I personally don't think it's a great strategy when you already think one thing to try and convince yourself you think something else. What is worth knowing is that it's all thought. Which means it's all made up, which means it's all up for grabs. And the beautiful thing about the mind is if you let it, if you don't cling to a point of view, to a particular way of making it up, it'll make it up again. And if you don't like that one, it'll make it up again. I remember talking to a business consultant, and she said, you know, her main thing when she would go in and work with a team was, you know, they would say, "Oh, well, this is the situation." And she would go, "Well, okay, what else you got?" And they'd go, "What do you mean?" Well, okay, that's one way of thinking about it. What else you got? Give me a new one. And it's not that they would come up with the right one or a positive one. It's that they would start to see, "Oh, I am making this up," and then stopping myself because of what I've made up. I'm making up this isn't going to work, and then not fully engaging because I think it's not going to work. Or I'm making up this is going to change my life and everything in it, and then feeling so much stress and pressure that I'm not doing things very effectively, and I'm getting overwhelmed, and I need to take time off to deal with all the stress and overwhelm that I created with this unrealistic expectation that somehow doing well in business is going to sort out my life. And maybe that's the biggest thought, the most common thought with solopreneurs, with many entrepreneurs. So if you're running Microsoft, if you're running a corporation, if you're looking to build an empire, that may or may not be about you. But almost every solopreneur, almost every person who wants to start a business kind of, you know, for freedom, for financial freedom, for personal freedom, for because it's work I really want to do. At some level, the business looks like a means to enjoy their life more, to feel better. So it's, in a way, it's what we think is going to make us okay, is going to make our life okay, or is going to help us become the kind of person who we think we should be. Well, that's a hell of a lot to put on a business, because that's not what a business is for. A business is a organized structure to facilitate the better exchange of goods and services. Like, that's what a business is. That's why there are businesses. So if your business is designed to do anything other than facilitate the exchange of goods and services, that's dead weight in your business. That is noise in your business. That is the opposite of present moment clarity, as we were talking earlier, that if we show up with less on our mind, we tend to do really well. And when we show up with a lot on our mind, well, not so much. And so there's a simplicity to this, that when it stops looking to you like in any way you need the business to do something for you other than facilitate the exchange of goods and services, which is what businesses are designed to do, you'll find it works really well, because all tools work really well for the job they're designed for and not so well for other jobs. So I was talking about this with money, because money is also a tool designed to facilitate the exchange of goods and services, but on a more individual level as opposed to a structural level. Well, if I've got a shovel, that is fantastic if I want to dig a hole or hit somebody over the head. For pretty much anything else, it's not a great tool. Like, it's a terrible tool to eat my lunch with. It's a really clunky tool to hammer a nail. It's an awkward tool to try and exchange goods and services, but it's really good for digging holes. Well, same with a business. It's a really ineffective way to make yourself happy, to prove that you're a good person, to be free. I mean, anyone who's been in business for more than 5 minutes knows that the truth about business is you tend to have less time, not more, right? This mythical place that, you know, make money in your spare time, you know, build a business that, like, it's not impossible, but the amount of work it takes to the point to get to the point where there isn't a lot of work, most people kind of don't talk about that bit. You know, they go, and then 10 years later, well, great. I mean, that's fantastic. Even if it's 5 years later, even better. But there tends to be a fair bit to do in those 5 years. Now, if you're up for that, I personally love that. I love growing a business. I think it's really cool. I like watching it grow. I like watching structures emerge. I like playing with them and seeing, oh, this one works really well. Oh, this one's not working so well. Oh, this is going in this direction. Now it's going in that direction. I enjoy all of that. But I don't think it's making me a better person. I don't think it's making me a worse person. I don't think it's making me happy. I don't think it's making me unhappy. I don't think it's making my life a stress-filled, pressureful place. Because the only thing that can fill me with stress and pressure is a lot of thought. And I can have a lot of thought and no business. And I can have a business and a lot of thought. And I can have very little thought and no business. And I can have very little thought and a big business. They're independent variables. The one does not create the other. Pressure and stress do not create an effective business. It's not like, the lump of coal being, the pressure turns the lump of coal into a diamond. Well, sure, but that works with lumps of coal and diamonds. That has nothing to do with human beings or business. I was talking to my son about this yesterday, and we were talking about intention. So he's 24, and he's kind of really, he's been in the work world for a few years, but he's expanding his horizons. He's moved to a new town. He's kind of playing with new things. He's going on interviews. And he was asking me about what I thought about, you know, being super intentional about things. Like, is it good to be really clear on your intentions all the time? And it was interesting because it wasn't a yes, no answer for me. It wasn't a there's only one way of thinking about this or even a right way of thinking about it. It was, it seems to me that knowing where you're headed can be really useful. Knowing why you're doing what you're doing can be really useful. Not essential, but it can be. But when it starts to fill your head, it isn't. Because anything that fills up your head is working against this crucial ratio, is working against your effectiveness, is leading you away from good business towards a lot of busyness. You know, there's a phrase I've used numerous times, which is, you know, a good life is good for business. A clear head is good for business. Because then we just tend to instinctively, intuitively follow the path that gets laid out for us as we go. I used to call it the soul path because it really looks to me, particularly when you spend time with people who really love what they do, whose lives seem to unfold. I say effortlessly, and I use phrases like effortless productivity and effortless success, not in the sense that they're not doing anything, but the reward to effort ratio makes it look effortless for what they do. And look, I don't know. I literally do not know of anyone who's built an effective business without putting in the hours. But if you love it, putting in the hours is awesome. And if you don't, well, okay, I guess it's worth it. Maybe if I get blank. So let me speak to that. If you want to get in, I'm sort of, you know, I'll talk to you. I won't talk to you. It's up to you. But if you do want a little bit of coaching around your business, numbers to call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S. And Canada, 760-918-4300. But here's another way of looking at business. And I'm going to sort of artificially divide it into two paths. There's not really two ways, but I'm going to kind of do that to kind of make a point. See, if I think that fundamentally I am not enough, I am not okay, and I go into business because I think that's going to make me enough, that's going to make me okay if it's successful, then from the very beginning, everything that I do is trying to serve two masters. It's trying to serve two goals that may at times be parallel and at times be perpendicular, that may at times overlap, but at times have nothing to do with one another. So on the one hand, I'm really kind of trying to grow my business. I'm trying to, you know, create more value in the world. I'm trying to find more customers. I'm trying to reach more people with what I do. I'm trying to increase revenue, all the things that a business is designed to do, that it runs on. And in the other, I'm doing many of those same things, but I'm doing them in order to feed my ego. I'm doing them in order to feel good about myself. I'm doing them in order to feel safe. I'm doing them in order to feel free, to buy freedom. So I'm using my business to try to buy happiness, buy freedom, buy good feelings about myself, buy reputation, buy power, buy influence. Which is like using a shovel to eat your lunch, hammer nails, and drive your car. It's just not the right use of the tool. So we tend to make terrible choices about where to spend our time and resources, because we tend to spend them on the things that give us the ego food, that give us the reward of good feeling, regardless of whether or not those things actually are growing the business, are growing the business's capacity to facilitate the exchange of goods and services, or actually helping the business to exchange more goods and services for more value. So a really simple, maybe even simplistic case in point. The amount of time, especially new solopreneurs, new healing, helping professionals, new people who are relatively new, even if your business isn't to do with that, one of the first places that everybody seems to go is, I need to work on my marketing. Now, the reason that that seems like such a good idea to so many people, I think, is A, because marketers are really good at tweaking our insecure thinking and then offering us relief in the form of their marketing program. So one thing is, you know, there's a lot of marketing directed at telling you how important marketing is. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess I need marketing. But marketing is, to my mind, a secondary activity. In other words, once you are making sales, marketing helps you increase your scope and scale. It helps you increase your ratio. So I'll give you an example that's not strictly a business example, but might make it simple to see. I had a friend who is, what was and is, but was an actor, and he was with a very small agent out here for commercials. And for those of you who don't know the industry, a lot of actors, before they get successful and known, make their living from doing commercials. And some, in fact, make their living for their whole careers by doing commercials, as opposed to the things we think of as acting. But it's sort of a great potential income place. And, you know, this guy kept talking about, you know, trying to get a better agent, and maybe I should get a better agent, but I don't want to let go of this agent because this, and for, I'd say, 5-6 years, he might go out on one audition a month. So say 12 auditions a year, and he might get one of them. But as he worked on his craft, as he got better at what he did, his ratio got better. And so I remember talking to him one time, and we were kind of just looking at his numbers, and he'd gone on, and I'm not going to get this accurate, but it was pretty close. He'd gone on 15 auditions that year to that point and had gotten 8 jobs. Okay, now he's ready for marketing. Now he's ready for a new agent, because now he's going to get so much more bang for each buck. He's going to get so many more jobs for each audition. So an agent that can get him a lot more auditions is worth a lot. When he was getting 1 in 12, or not even 1 in 12, say like 1 in 20, then an agent who got him 40 auditions, okay, well, that's 2 jobs. But it's not a great payoff for the amount of energy that it takes to do different marketing, or in this case, get a new agent. But when you're getting 1 in 2, if that agent can get you 20 auditions, that's now getting you 10 jobs. Well, that's worth some time. That's worth some resource. That's worth putting your energy into, because the reward to effort ratio is already high. So why would we market before we already are doing good business? Well, as I say, one reason is because it you know, everyone tells us it's a good idea. But here's another reason that's a little bit subtler. It feels really good when people like our Facebook. It feels really good when people respond to our tweets. Right. I was about to do something, and I'll just out myself now. I was going to say, it feels really good when somebody does something to our Instagram, but actually I'm so not on Instagram that I don't know what they do to you on Instagram, but I suppose they heart your picture, if I'm remembering my daughter's Instagram correctly. Like, there's something where people know me, people like me, and trust me, I am talking from personal experience here, that if we're in business for our own good feeling, because we think, gosh, if I'm successful at business, then that means blah, 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 then we're going to be really drawn to activities that get us quick hit. That get us, you had X number of views, you had X number of listens, you had X number of people check out. It's exciting, but for all the wrong reasons. It's exciting because it makes me feel really good about myself, regardless of whether or not it moves the needle on the bottom line, regardless of whether or not it's actually helping me grow my business, which means both increasing the amount of goods and services and the value that I'm getting for those goods and services that I'm getting out into the world and the value I'm getting in return, and increasing my capacity through the business to do that in the world. So why grow a big business? Well, one of two reasons. One reason is because if I run a big business, then I am very successful and I am very important. And you may know businesses like that, where they tend not to last for very long, because while things are going well, they last. But then when things aren't going well, there's a lot of overhead. There's a lot of employees. There's a lot of money being spent on things that aren't necessary, which doesn't allow for a lot of fluidity and flexibility when things aren't going so well. But the other reason that a business grows really big is because it's doing good business. And you get to a certain point where you go, oh, we could now make a better use of our time and resources if we weren't doing everything ourselves. I mean, I remember the moment where I suddenly realized after I'd been being told that I needed an executive assistant for a couple of years by coaches and mentors. And I was like, yeah, well, no, I did the math. And it's like, that would cost this much money. And that would mean I had to do this. Well, I remember one day having my hand on the gate outside my office, the entry gate, and thinking about everything that I had to do in the business that day. And just going, oh, if I spent all my time doing that, I don't have any time to do the things that actually make money. Because I was at a level where there was now a sufficient amount of admin and things to do that just from a time point of view, it was unwieldy for me. Well, I initiated the hiring of my first assistant within that hour. Because now it wasn't about, yeah, it'd be cool to have an assistant, or yeah, I should, you know, grow this company. It was a really practical response to best use of time and resources to grow the business so that it could do an even better job of facilitating the exchange of goods and services in the marketplace for value. In this case, generally speaking, financial value. So, if I was going to sum up today, I think I'd sum it up in the title of the show. If you want to work on your business, if you want to grow your business, if you want to be good at business, that is eminently doable for anyone. And two things that help a lot are falling in love with it so that you really enjoy it. You're not in a rush anymore. And engaging fully with it, both of which will happen naturally as you have less and less thinking about it, as you worry about trying to think right less and less, you wind up just doing better. And then the second thing is to see that the things that kind of put us off about business. Oh man, I don't want to be busy. Well, that's a state of mind. I don't want the stress. Well, that's a state of mind. I don't want the pressure. That's a state of mind. Well, I, you know, how will I know if I'm doing the right thing? That is a lot of thinking. And you don't have to think that. So if you have found today's helpful, if you want to learn more, join me next week. We begin on Monday, michaelneal.org/business. It's a 3-week program. It's going to be really fun. It's low cost. I think you'll enjoy it. Do check out the Hay House World Summit, the You Can Heal Your Life Summit at youcanhealyourlifesummit.com. And until next week, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk with you soon. Bye-bye for now.